I priced probably nearly a half a million dollars in coins over the last 24 to 36 hours or something to get ready for the new year. One thing we're seeing a lot of folks, and I really want you to think about, is your 401k and IRA status. The economy and the stock market are not synonymous at all. If you bother watching, it's all over the board. I mean, the stock market is absolutely bonkers, up, down, all over the place. It's gone from, in the last, I don't know, 6 months, you know, from, well, in the last year, it's fluctuated from like 19,000, I think. No, they said in the last 12 months, I think it's fluctuated from like 18,500 to 28,000 on the Dow. I mean, you talk about mega, massive, incredible volatility. And then you watch like Fox News and they say, oh, it's nothing to worry about, blah, 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 because basically, you know, it's not affecting anything, which is like, that is senseless. It makes no sense whatsoever that it wouldn't affect things, other than the fact that the stock market is what they call malarkey. Have you heard that word? That's one of those words I think I picked up as a kid from some old people. But it's malarkey. It's really, really unreasonable, unsensible. It does not make sense. I'm telling you, folks, what I believe is that there's huge market volatility, okay? Now, I know you turn to the show and you know, you expect financial information. Today, we're going to be probably hitting it hard. One of my biggest issues is I got such a stack of stuff to go through. I never, ever get to it. I tend to bog down on one topic. But in the last year, it's been all over the place. Now, if the economy and the market indexes were truly a reflection one of another, as they're supposed to be, we would be seeing huge effects from this, and we're not. We're seeing, or maybe we are, I don't know. But what I do know is that the overall sales numbers for Christmas, I can't remember what the term is they use. They call it the Santa, what is it? It's something like, you know, the Santa effect or something. In any retail business, the fourth quarter of the year is hands down the most important quarter, okay? Then you add on top of that, right around Christmas, it gets even more so. We get so crazy busy selling stuff that we can't keep up, you know? And then it's funny because we really don't take credit cards and Visas and debit cards typically, but around Christmas and when people are buying, you know, the average size gift, I think is probably $50 to $100. Which is, to some of you might be like, well, that's a fair amount of money. And it is, if you're a normal business, I suppose. But in general, people come in, they've got their, you know, their credit card. They don't know what they're doing. They're buying coins as gifts for their, you know, relatives or friends or dad or whatever that collects coins. And so we have so many Visa transactions. We typically don't take credit cards on any type of normal transactions. We just don't do it for obvious reasons. We had a friend of mine was telling me that he had a guy. There's so many ways. If you know the system, I used to say when I was in banking, so many things in banking are held together strictly by people's ethics. If you really, really know how to play the game, which obviously few people do, you can take banks for a ride, big time. And the way it's done, here you go. I should really be teaching you this, shouldn't I? Simplistically, it's establishing credit, credibility, relationships. And the problem is most thieves, the first time you put a $20 bill in front of them, what do? They nab it, right? They don't have the patience. And I used to watch, you know, occasionally real pros. Where they would work the bank, they'd borrow money. And, you know, it gets to the point, folks, where you can legally steal from a bank. And because it's their choice, they basically call it legal bank theft. You can get them to loan you money that they should never loan you. How do you do it? Now, just remember, I'm just educating. I have no intention of teaching you how to defraud a bank. So please don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. In fact, I probably shouldn't even be talking about this, but I will, which I'm not sure why. But basically, you build credit up, okay, and you build up more and more and more. You know, you borrow, you pay off, you borrow, you pay off, you borrow, you pay off. And you let the numbers go up and up and up. Over time, you build credit and credibility. I've got a million and a half dollar line of credit on my signature at the bank. In 30 years of banking, obviously, I was in banking for years. But in 30 years of banking, I've never once ever had even a 30-day late. I've never had any kind of medical judgments. I've never had one drop of negative credit. I've never been late. I've never bounced a check. Now, you got to think, in this business, I mean, we move. You know, we've had years where we're doing $130 million. Just in coin buying, in precious metals buying over the counter, we've never bounced a check. So what happens is you build this credibility up, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until they trust you and they give you more and more and more. That's why credit is so important. People hate credit. It's part of the system. Now, debt, the credit debt issue in America is out of control. I mean, everybody, you know, it starts out with you got to have a credit card to build credit. Okay. Now you got to have a credit card to do anything. You want to rent a hotel, you want to fly on a plane. I mean, you want to do anything at all. You got to have a credit card. Which is just one of the many, many factors in how they can technically track every single thing you do. We've actually had people come in and, you know, try to buy substantial amounts of precious metals on credit cards. Well, our answer is no. Of course it is. Why? Well, credit card transactions are disputable. You can do all kinds of things. I mean, we've fallen prey to all kinds of things because we, you know, have to use PayPal if we sell on eBay. And we're not, you know, a lot of people are like, I'll just sell it on eBay. eBay is, man, you've got to know what you're doing out there. We have an eBay store. If you want to see our credibility, Coins Plus Inc. is our username on eBay. Coins Plus Inc. And we sell literally maybe 1-2% of our total sales come from eBay. But it's still, you know, it's definitely down from, you know, the good old days. But we still probably do 7,500 or 75,000 a month or something or whatever. There was a time we were doing over $2 million a year on eBay, just because the money was so good, and, you know, and it was a lot more sensible source. It's just become a train wreck, and for selling coins, it's just difficult. And by difficult, I mean a lot of people. Let me put it this way: it's difficult if you're ethical. Okay, eBay is in general a dumping ground for people's junk. Okay, coins are valued based on a large variety of factors. Okay, what kinds of things affect a coin's value? Let me write this down. Okay. So here's the deal. You get an old coin, okay? You have got, the thing that people want is originality, okay? Real buyers, real collectors, real investors, they want complete and total originality. They want, you know, that coin gets minted or struck, and maybe it circulates, maybe it doesn't. Obviously, you get old enough coins uncirculated, you're into some money. Morgan silver dollars are a lot more common uncirculated because of the big bank releases of the day or in the 60s and 70s. But the thing is you get, you know, if you take a coin, I have seen coins ruined from cleaning. Well, if you have any collectible coins or anyone you know has collectible coins, do not, whatever you do, do not clean them. We run into people that are like OCD, you know, and if they store their silver improperly or handle it all the time and get their body oil on it, it will tarnish. Silver tarnishes. Silver is very sensitive to the atmosphere. It oxidizes easily. We sell it usually in tubes of, you know, 20 or whatever. If you just leave them in there, they'll stay pristine and perfect for as long as you want. But a lot of people handle it a lot, etc. But, you know, so overall, if you leave it alone, you're fine. But when some people just want to clean stuff. I could tell you it's so many stories, I couldn't even count them. One thing I run into is people will get a coin. Like a gal a while ago had an 1896 Indian penny, okay? 1896 Indian penny, honestly, even in decent, what we call fine to very fine condition, which is decent, it's worth a buck, okay? So she looks on eBay and she sees an 1896 Indian penny, doesn't know anything about it, and it actually sold for like $900. Well, as far as she's concerned, the only difference between her coin and that coin was shiny. And so she just cleans the heck out of her coin. Luckily, the coin wasn't worth anything anyway. She destroys the value. Well, the reason that other coin brought so much was it was a certified proof, okay? They made, when you get into Indian pennies, they only made a few hundred proofs per year. You know, they're very scarce, very scarce. But on average, they're worth a few hundred bucks a piece, which is kind of surprising. There's a lot of coins like that out there that where value still really exists. A lot of people get weird about stuff like that. They're like, no, I just want gold and silver. You know, really, if you're investing, not only is it wise, it's kind of fun to build a portfolio, right? I mean, you get all the precious metals you need. You establish yourself so you feel comfortable, you feel solid. You've got to know and remember and recall that precious metals have been the pinnacle form of wealth from the beginning of written human history. they have always, always, always been true wealth. Over and above anything else, okay, we happen to be in an era where we have basically defrauded the people of their wealth at such an extreme. I was talking to a guy the other day. I love the ones I love is people that buy into this. What do they call it? Like Democrat, they call it democratic socialism is the new thing. What it really is a nice name for budding communism. Okay. Communism is communism. Socialism is just a transition towards communism, period. That's it. It's nothing more, nothing less. So there is no difference. You look at Cuba and what those people did, and you know, you've got the five forms of government. Okay, they are what they are. There's only five true forms of government: democracy, a republic, a monarchy, communism, and a dictatorship, okay? And then I'm looking on Google. They've got, what are the four types of government? What are the seven types of government? What are the eight types of government? What are the 10 types of government? These are things, you know, they've got like, you know, for, you know, this is interesting because there's five forms of government, but they've got, you know, within the modern nation state, government operates at many different levels, ranging from villages to cities, counties, provinces, and states. So they have types of governments: monarchy, true; constitutional government, that's a republic, true; democracy, true; dictatorship, true; distribution of authority, what, you know, what is that? Then they say there's one a type of government called federal systems, whatever that is. And then they say there's unitary states. That's somebody who had nothing better than to write and make themselves an expert. It's unbelievable. I've got literally, this is on Google. I typed in the five forms of government. I got people also ask, what are the four types of government? What are the seven types of government? What are the eight types of government? What are the 10 types of government? What are the three types of government? What are the six types of government? Folks, there's five basic forms of government. And like I said, what are they? Democracy, republic, monarchy, communism. Those, and all but I think two of them are transitional, okay? A democracy is a transitional form of government to what? To communism. Why in the world, I'll never get, people in a democracy, how does it work? Have you ever heard the term, the 51% vote to take from the 49? I mean, a democracy is just, you know, the majority rules. And what, you know, what are they going to do? They, you know, the Obama did the one percenter thing and he vilified the 1%. Democratic socialism says, you got money, I don't. That means that you stole it or took it or you owe me. Folks, they use what's called zero sum thinking. Now, I want you to think about this. Zero sum thinking is how they deceive you. What that means is they make you think that there is a fixed amount of income or a fixed amount of wealth in existence. And that if person citizen A has it, that means citizen B can't have it. If citizen B gets it from citizen A, you know, et cetera. The true matter of fact is humans, I've talked about those things in the Bible that are truly considered true wealth, okay? Those attributes are, well, the only things that are considered true wealth biblically from the beginning to the end. Now, I love the Bible. I believe the Bible. I believe it's the Word of God. I believe that God, you know, he lays things out for us. I believe in a lot of ways he's kept it simple. I think the Catholic Church over-canonized the Bible. I think there's scripture that belongs in there that's been taken out. However, the Bible, although not complete, and you got to think about this, is still sufficient, okay? So just because everything isn't in the Bible, you know, it doesn't tell you whether you should put on your left shoe before your right shoe, okay? Those are all choices. Why? Because we have free will. But the fact of the matter is gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones are the only true forms of wealth, okay? You look at any major corporation, you look at anybody who's a millionaire, billionaire, one of those factors played a role, okay? Even with like multi-level marketing where you're basically trying to earn money that you didn't earn, you know, you're using people, okay? You've got other people going out trying to get other people to join the club. They're all pouring money in, buying all the educational material, buying, you know, on it goes. And they have big conferences where they charge $1,000 a weekend and couples go. And you know, they appeal to like this guy that I was talking to, who I actually really like and respect, who's actually Cuban, surprisingly. What's really bad is when Fidel Castro took over, this guy's grandfather owned the majority of cigar manufacturers down there. He had like literally like 100 homes for employees. He rented out. He let employees have to live in, and et cetera. When Fidel took over, they came to him and said, pick a house. And he said, what do you mean? They said, of all your homes, you can pick one house to keep. The rest goes to the government. He's like, what are you talking about? And they said, that's the way it works. And they said, you're lucky to even get a house. But because you have so many, we're going to let you have one. Well, he said, you know that the cigar factory is going to come apart at the seams. And what happened was the people are no longer incentivized. Humans are incentivized by gain, okay? This guy, and I've heard other people argue, I don't care about money. I don't work for money. I said, well, then what do you work for? I work so that someday I can have, you know, time to do whatever I want with my wife. If we see a beautiful place and want to travel there, I want to be set up so I can go there. And I said, and exactly how are you going to do that? He said, well, I'm going to have enough money, ding, 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 to pay for whatever I want, okay, and live the life I want to live. Well, there it is. It's about money. I don't care what form of government it is. Democracy is a redistribution of wealth, right? You're transferring wealth from the rich to the poor, supposedly, okay? But the fact of the matter is there's a conglomerate of people that are truly actually the ones that are gaining all of the wealth, okay? And you know, you've got the bourgeoisie and proletariat, which was phrases that were coined by Karl Marx during a time when, unfortunately, sadly, it was necessary. The employees, if you want, they weren't even employees. They were slave labor. People were owned by the factory. They could, they'd get paid in factory money. They had the shop. That's that song, you know, where they talk about, you know, I spend my money at the company store. You know, in other words, they'd pay you in a form of income that you had to spend your money with them. So they double dipped you. They kept you at a point where you could not gain wealth. You could not grow your wealth, nothing. You were stuck using their money, you know, to buy whatever you needed at the company store. And, you know, it's, it, the song goes, it talks about, you know, spend my money at the company store. And I wish I could do better than that for the lyrics. But I don't know if many of you heard it, but it's true. It basically refers to the fact that 16, I think it's called 16 tons. And the words, let me see if this is it. It says, now here's a great, you know, I'm doing this radio show and I'm quoting this stuff. Lord, what am I doing? But anyway, it says, some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A man that's weak and a back that's strong. And then it, then this is where you've probably heard it where it says, you load 16 tons and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal, and the straw boss said, well, bless my soul. You load 16 tons and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. And then it repeats itself. Let's see what else. There's another one. Okay, you got 16 tons. If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't. A lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, you call me. Don't you call me, because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Well, that's called 16 tons. The point being that that was the beginning of what we do now. The difference is we don't even know it. We don't even know how deep in debt we are. We don't know that each and every individual citizen has over $1 million in debt. Now, contrast that when, you know, Clinton was in office. You've got essentially, was that 92, you know, you, and so you go 92, you go, 2002, 2012, 2018. That's 26 years ago. 26 years ago, or 24, 5, whatever it was, we had the income flow to eradicate our debt, absolve the Federal Reserve, go back to a gold standard, and put the power of money back in the hands of people. Oh, a lot of people ask questions about the $10,000 cash law. What is that? You get people that'll come in and say, I can't spend more than $10,000 because of this or that. They don't understand the law. Now, what does that law say? That's called the cash transaction reporting law. it was instituted as part of the RICO Act, which was a racketeering act. What did the RICO Act do? The RICO Act was written because of the mob had a lot of cash, and they have their own banks, and they didn't need any of it, and the government wanted to know what they had. Now, the RICO Act was instituted officially in 1970, but the racketeering form, basically the first write-up and application of it was 1934. The $10,000 cash in 1934, one of the arguments, I think, of FDR was, he said, quote, if a man has enough cash to buy a palatial estate, the government has a right to know. Well, first of all things aside, no, they don't. They don't have a right to know any of that. It's your own private business. But they've implemented all these laws, and what do? We, you know, it's always done under the guise of safety and security. So what happened? You had, you know, corruption. I don't know. I'd have to. The real application of the law was during Prohibition. And they wanted to know who had what and made it illegal to have a bunch of cash. But the point was $10,000 cash. Actually, like I said, the first application of it was in the 1920s. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, you have lost 99.5% of the spending power of your dollar. Now think about that. You have lost 99.5% of the spending power of your dollar. So you go back to that time, $10,000 now, well, back then was worth 200 times what it's worth today. So when that law was first put into place, the $10,000 cash law, it was the equivalent of $2 million today. It may even be worse. I use the term 99.5% because that's a term, or that was the ratio about 10 years ago, okay? Now it's probably 99.75%. It could be 40 times or whatever. So that $10,000 now could be the equivalent of $4 million. So they create this law so that everybody's a criminal. You know, there's that book written not long ago in the last couple of years called Three Crimes a Day or Three Felonies a Day, basically showing how, you know, if you don't throw out your garbage right, you know, if you've got a cleaning solution that is store-bought at the grocery store, and you get done and you dump the container in the garbage, even if it's empty, you break a law. And, you know, if you don't dispose of your tires properly when you change them on your car, you broke a law. You know, it goes on and on like this, right? And it's, you know, if you fertilize and the fertilizer gets in water and goes into the street and goes down the drain, you just broke. They can charge you with a felony if they want. Luckily, they don't yet, but they've got all these laws in play so that at any time they can hang you out to dry. So when they created this $10,000 cash law, which they call the CTR, cash transaction reporting, it was supposedly to protect the nation. It's like all the freedoms we've given up over 9/11. I cannot believe how bad people tolerate all this stuff. I cannot stand going through the airport, or as when I was recently in Mexico, the aeropuerto, you're so violated. I mean, they find a little baggy spot in your shirt, and pretty soon, literally, I've got a guy, you know, with his hands in my pants, feeling it, just everything, just over the top, over the top. And, they don't, whatever. You get my point. It's just gotten crazy, okay? So the what is the $10,000 law? What does it say? It says that if you spend $10,000 or more cash, you're supposed to be reported to the IRS. The nice thing about what we do is there's none of this 1099 reporting. But people literally think if they bring in a cashier's check for $38,000, they're going to get reported to the IRS. They think if they sell us $25,000 in gold, it's going to get reported to the to the IRS or whoever the authorities are. Not the case. Not the case at all. In fact, pretty much almost everything we sell, especially to investors, 100% almost, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, barely anything other than that is all non-1099 reportable. It's all anonymous, liquid, transportable cash, okay? We do that on purpose because we keep you off the radar. In doing this business over 20 years and literally buying and selling combined real close to $1 billion. And folks, I'm not trying to brag. It's really hard. I mean, I really shouldn't even be telling you those numbers, but that's just because, you listen to that and you go, oh my gosh, Kevin's got to be just so filthy rich. It's not funny. No, not even close. The fact of the matter is, our margins are so thin. I have done transactions for $1 million where I literally make $500. It's high volume. As we say, we're a high volume, low margin dealer. I wouldn't want to refer to it as greed, but I want it all. I want, the River Nile of precious metals going through Coins Plus. I take out a little ladle for ourselves, a tiny little teaspoon of water, and the rest of it just continues to flow on. That's our thought process, okay? A lot of these coin shops, and when I went into business in the 90s, I was, and I still am, very unpopular. I brought a whole new attitude to this city in a number of ways. Number one, complete transparency with the customer, because if you're honest, you got nothing to hide. You can tell people exactly what you're paying them for a product, exactly what you're buying it back for. You know, there's coin dealers out there that will sell you, like the guy down at the flour mill. I mean, the guy at the flour mill tries to convince people to give him all their gold. And then he says, then you can draw your gold out to spend money on it like a debit card or a Visa or whatever. I think it's a Visa, because that way he's getting a piece of percentage, and it's a big racket. But I've talked to him about it. In fact, I talked to him about it recently. It's just a racket. It's the most foolish, crazy thing. The guy's got a little shop in the flour mill. If you don't know what the flour mill is, that's where Clinker Daggers, the restaurant, is down by the river. Really cool old building. And he's got a jewelry store there, and he does all, he's got precious metals, but not a lot. And he wants people to give him all their precious metals. And then he gives you a Visa or a credit card that you can draw, you know, money out of your own metals. Well, why would you do that? First of all, you look in there, it's a glass-windowed building, okay? And then inside of that, visible as could be, you've got an antique standalone vault, just an old safe, and he keeps everybody's stuff in there, supposedly. Train wreck, in my opinion, just a train wreck waiting to happen. You think, well, those old vaults weigh thousands of pounds. No one's ever getting that out of there. Oh, really? You obviously don't know. I mean, you got to hire somebody to move a safe. When we moved, we just moved in the last month or two, you know, and that turns your life upside down. But the moving company brought in, I think, DeVries or somebody like Allied or whoever to move our two, what we call our day safes. When I built my last house, I can tell you now because I'm out of there, but I had built a hidden door in the cabinetry that was phenomenal, and it went down a set of stairs. So we had done an addition to the home, and underneath that addition, we had built a class two vault. And it was basically, for some reason, all bank vaults hinge on the right. In other words, the hinge is on the right. So they had gotten this safe in at one point in time. And when I built my building, they tried to sell it to me. And I said, the way my things are, I need to hinge on the left. I don't know why. It's just traditionally standard, you know, architectural, structural, whatever. So when I later on, so that was when I built my building, they tried to sell me this door. Basically, we built then and build. Everything I built has a vault in it, but I use modular safes. What are those? They take huge slabs of concrete that are class two. Okay. Class two means 36 inches of poured concrete. Well, now they have class two composite vaults, which is they're huge panels that they crane in, and they have these sleeves that go together. And our vault door is like 2 foot thick, and you know, on and on. So, you know, basically, we've got the highest rated privately held depository service in the United States, or I'm sorry, in the Western region. As usual. I just didn't have a lot of time. Let me tell you, folks. So the RICO Act, basically the $10,000 cash law, it's not something for you to worry about. Okay. You just don't worry about it. It doesn't apply. Then there's the Broker Reporting Act, which is if you sell over a certain amount of metal in a certain period of time, but it has to be certain kinds of metal and it can be reportable, and we'll always educate you on that. You just call and ask and we'll explain all of it. Okay. Now, Happy New Year. All right, because I'm not going to be talking to you until 2019, which I can't even believe. I hope 2018 was a great year. I pray right now to the Lord. Lord, I pray that every person that listens to this show has the most blessed, glorious, prosperous 2019 possible. I pray that you work in each and every one of their lives. I pray that you do something phenomenal. I pray that people find their talents and that people live by faith and see through eyes of faith, Lord. And I just pray that you would lift them up and that they would glorify you, because you, Lord, live for glory. When you do good things, why? Because you want the glory, Lord. And I pray that all these listeners would glorify you. I pray that not a one of them would be ashamed to ever speak your name, to ever, ever share you with others. I beg of you, God, I ask you for these listeners. to be protected, to have a covering over their lives, to be blessed. You know, I pray that you guard them, protect them from the evil one, as Jesus would say. I just pray that 2019 is an incredible year for these individual believers. I believe that 2019 is going to be a very stressful year for this nation. I believe that there's going to be some serious financial changes going on. They're already occurring, okay? I don't have time to get into it, but there's no question in my mind, no doubt. We are teetering. The word Trump means final overriding factor or resource, last chance, okay? Now, Donald Trump's got his flaws, but he was the last shot, okay? Now, he as a person has his own flaws, but, you know, there's things he gave us opportunities to do and whatnot. It sounds like Ruth Bader Ginsburg may pass or retire. He would get to promote one more Supreme Court justice. That would be a blessing. I pray that that would happen. Not that I'm praying something bad for Ruth Bader, but I'm just praying that he could promote one more. So, Lord, I just pray for your blessings on these listeners. I pray that each and every one of them would grow in your word. I pray that they'd learn forgiveness. I pray that they'd live by the fruits of the Spirit, that each and every listener would memorize the fruits of the Spirit, and that they would reflect on those in every situation that challenges them so that they reflect Christ better and more often than ever before. Folks, now is a great time. Let me tell you, you want to roll over your 401k and IRA? Do it now. Get it into metals, period. I won't go into detail. Don't have time. It's such a good time, and it's necessary. Number two, roll out. Here's the deal. If you roll your 401k or IRA out in January this year, coming up, 2019, you do not owe taxes on that until April of 2020. The metals will move. Big. I predict, okay, gold's in the 12s, silver's in the, you know, 16s. I predict, this is Kevin's prediction, mark my words, that by the end of 2019, gold is in at least in the mid-1600s, probably higher. It takes a small tick and away it goes. It could be 1850, 2000. I mean, it's nothing for that to happen. Silver's going to take off. It's going to be a big, big year in the metals. And that, of course, equates to the rare coins, etc. Folks, you can roll out now. It's a perfect, perfect time to get your money out. Why? Because you take it out in January. You don't owe till April of the next year. That's about 16 months. The growth in the metals will pay your taxes for you. Okay, then it's yours. It's anonymous. It's off the books. It's yours. No more 1099. No more nothing. It's all yours. That's how I live. That's the way I pray that you live. I'm sorry I'm out of time. God bless you. God bless you. May you have the most blessed New Year's. Please, you know, keep us in mind in your prayers. Praise God. Happy New Year. Thanks for tuning in. God bless and bye-bye.